Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the little-known eighth deadly sin, Kyle Krause.
Thank you. I'm glad you have finally realized my true power. I am truly
what the sin actually is, we haven't decided yet, but he's the eighth one. Just trust me.
It's the sin Fritz. That's what it is.
Well, then that would make him the ninth, I suppose. We're getting too deep into the weeds here. How are you, sir?
We're going off the rails. I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I am busy.
So I have heard you have a lot of stuff on your plate.
I do. The stuff furthest down the line, or publicly down the line, I've been invited to table at Anime North this May 24th through the 26th. So if you're in the Toronto area and you want to see me amongst all the animes, grab your tickets. I'll see you there. I'll have more details about panels, table placement, all that as soon as I know. It's still a few weeks out from now. And then I will be returning to Fan Expo this summer, August 22nd through 25th. As far as I know, Adam Bryce Thomas will be there as well. I don't know if we'll be tabling together or if he'll be somewhere else in the hall, but we'll actually have more Sonic presence than normal, which is super cool. And Leah Baker has also been confirmed for that one, I believe. Yes, 99% sure. Got to look at the email again. So, lots of Sonic presence. I will not be returning to Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina this year for a myriad of reasons. I am super bummed about it. It's nothing to do with the show. The show is awesome. The showrunners are cool. If you're in the Charlotte area, go. It's like one of the best first-time shows for folks who've never done conventions before. It's huge, but it's not overwhelming. Very good family show. So go that way, tell them Ian sent you, they'll look at you funny and say, who? Because there's a million creators out there, but that's besides the point. Got a bunch of licensed work coming up, none of which I can talk about. I am super deep into the Tangle Whisper miniseries, that I can talk about. You guys know that's coming. Working on something else I can't talk about that is really cool. I have scripts in the final stages of revisions for something else that I can't talk about, but it's super cool. It's another big license that 8-year-old me would be going nuts that I'm attached to. There's a super hyper mega huge hashtag knowing smile that I probably won't be able to talk about for like 2 years. So we'll just let that lie. And if you play Sega Heroes, the mobile game, which is pretty bloody addictive, I lose about an hour a day into it easy. That's not counting how many times I log in throughout the day to get the bonus stuff, but they just introduced guilds. So search for Bumblecast. No, excuse me. Search for Bumble Guild. There we go. That is the official guild for the Bumblecast. We're about 10 out of 30 slots full, so there's still room. And if you haven't given it a shot, do so. It's a really nifty, free-to-play puzzle matcher Sega love letter game. The prices on it are kind of ridiculous, like ludicrously ridiculous. But I haven't spent a penny on it, and I've unlocked a fair number of units, and I've got them in a pretty good position. And like I said, it's really, really fun to play. Like, I don't understand why it's so much fun to play. But that's all the news on my end. What do you got going on, Kyle?
Well, I wish I was in the Toronto area so I could be at Toronto shows, but sadly, I am not. I am in a place where there isn't anything happening. All right, I take that back. It's like Phoenix Fan Fest or whatever it's going to be called this year coming up. They had to change the name because it was Phoenix Comic Con. Well, let's just say Comic Con International is a pile of a bag of insert noun here. And very litigious. So there, Phoenix Comic-Con is struggling to find a new name. So I don't know if I'll be at that this year or not. I mean, I won't be at it as an exhibitor or anything, or as a panelist.
Sincerely hope that everything is spelled with a PH.
Is what?
I sincerely hope everything's spelled with a PH.
Sadly, it is not. I wish it were. That would make it even better. But regardless, That's like the only show I know of coming up, other than, I guess, Game On Expo, which is also a good show. A lot smaller than Phoenix Comic Con, which is good because Phoenix Comic Con has actually grown quite a bit. It's a very large show at this point, so I'm kind of wondering if it's going to end up being on the level of like Salt Lake Comic Con or something one of these days, because it was very crowded like a year ago. But unfortunately, I'm not in the Toronto area. Otherwise, I would be at Anime North and Fan Expo too, but I am not. Oh, well. So, Ian, recent news, we have seen that of things happening in space. We finally photographed a black hole.
We did.
Holy crap. That is kind of a big deal. First of all, I kind of didn't realize we had never actually like photographed one or like really seen one at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this was kind of like, we haven't seen black holes before? We know they exist. How haven't we seen one? But apparently we had not until now.
And I was watching a video explaining what all the fuzziness is. And it's not, that black center is not the black hole.
No, no.
It's more or less its shadow. And what we're seeing is the light bending around it and being thrown back out. The
yeah.
stuff that isn't absorbed. So the black hole itself is like a smaller point within the black mass that we see. But that black mass is technically the back and the front of it because
yeah.
of the way that the light is bending.
Yeah.
And there are like different layers of different angles of it in concentric circles going inwards. And that guile...
It's just sucking all that light in there. It's just going, give me that light.
It's like, it's a three-dimensional object that we can only perceive on a 2D plane because of the way it is warping space-time, and that's not even talking about all the light and the fuzziness that's going around it, and that's just, I can kind of wrap my head around it, but it's like the light going around the event horizon. It's not quite right. It's bent, it's twisted, it's warped, and it's really cool, and I'm glad it's 55 million miles away, because that would really do a number on us.
It's probably, well, also another reason why it's so fuzzy is because of the resolution of the telescopes used is not quite high enough to capture something that far away in exquisite detail.
But we're looking at literally defies our
right.
perception of reality
right.
55 million light years away.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry if it's a little blurry.
That's okay.
Why don't you get a little closer yourself?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm not like saying, it's blurry. Who cares? It's stupid. No, that's freaking awesome. It's the fact that it took like the entire like scientific community, the entire scientific community that observes space, I should say, the astronomy community, there we go, to try and get a picture of this black hole, and that this is the best we could do for now. It's like, geez, we are so far behind scientifically, just in terms of being able to observe the universe. It's like, oh man, we are but a tiny speck of nothingness out in the middle of this giant universe.
At the same time.
And it's freaking cool.
All those telescopes and all those researchers came together for that signature purpose.
Right.
Singular purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool too.
That is very cool.
There was also a to scale image I saw where you see the black center and then you see our entire solar system and where the Voyager 2 probe is, having just left, I think it's the heliopause. You know, it is in literal interstellar space at this point, and it all fits very neatly inside that space. And it's like, well, if you felt small and insignificant, guess what? It's really going to hammer home now!
Guess what? You could fit in a black hole. And so could everything else you know.
It's a great big universe, and we're all really dinky.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But it's really freaking cool. So I wanted to just mention that before we move on in other things. But like photographing a black hole, jeez. I've seen some of the like the models of what a black hole could look like or what it does look like without being in better resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks really cool too. Have you seen the image of the zoomed out version where it's kind of backed up, I guess, probably closer to the actual resolution of the telescopes?
No.
And you see everything around it, just sort of like all this light around the black hole and all these other, like, it's pretty crazy.
Gosh.
So it looks really cool, but it's also very, very, we're very diminutive on this scale. We're nothing. We're nothing, Ian. We are nothing.
Well, the first time I felt that was, this poster is like old now, but
yeah,
it was a shot of the night sky. And then it was a, I think, millimeter by millimeter square in the seemingly empty black space between stars.
Yep.
And they aimed the Hubble telescope at it for I forget how long to see what was out there. And it's just this incalculable number of galaxies.
Right.
Not stars, galaxies, which in and of themselves are full of trillions of stars and goodness knows what else. And it was just that tiny, tiny speck of the night sky. And it's like, you know what? I can't. You cannot fathom that level of enormity. And it's cool and it's humbling and it's depressing. it really grounds you.
Yeah, I remember, geez, back in like the early 90s, maybe, like the first time I ever went to an IMAX theater. This was when IMAX was like almost solely the realm of educational movies.
Right.
And I remember like the first movie we watched there that I ever saw in IMAX was like starting on Earth and then zooming out and zooming out and zooming out and zooming out and zooming out for forever. And then there was a point where the narrator said, at this point in space, all of these things that look like individual stars are actually entire galaxies. And I'm just like, okay. And I was in like, geez, how old was I? 6, 7 years old. I was in first grade, I think. And I'm like,
oh, geez.
Okay. my mind is blown. My tiny, tiny 7-year-old mind has exploded now. It's all over the place.
I need nap time, please.
This was also at the point in my life where I really loved space. So, you know, we all go through that phase, I think. A lot of people do.
Does that phase ever really end, though?
No. Space is always cool. I always like space. So,
in other spacey news, the trailer for the next Star Wars dropped.
Indeed it did.
I find myself a man of two minds, Kyle. Because on the one hand, I'm wary. Because the sequels left something to be desired in their own ways. And I'm twice bitten, thrice shy this time going in.
Yeah.
But it also got me super hyped.
I still haven't watched it. I probably won't.
You need unless to watch it because... that final scene!
End up seeing it in a theater.
The final scene, the freaking laugh. Just, you have me, okay? I can fight, but you have hooked me. I am a fish on the pier, flapping about, trying to get free, but it's no use. Fillet me, Skywalker. Feast upon my energy. You have my soul. I'm just going to be a cranky old man about it later.
That's okay. I still haven't even seen Solo. Like, I feel so weird, kind of.
I haven't either, and I feel that's how most people are.
Yeah, but it's like there's a Star Wars movie out there, and I have not seen it. That's very strange to me. And I'm like, I don't even know if I really have much of a desire to see it. That's
I
even
feel
stranger.
The same way.
That's even stranger. It's like there's a Star Wars movie, and I'm like, I have absolutely zero desire to watch this.
I keep forgetting that it's there.
Yeah,
that and Rogue One. It's like, oh yeah, that was a thing.
I like Rogue
One. I liked Rogue One, but.
I liked Rogue One at the time, but yeah, I'm with you. I kind of forget about it existing, and it's a shame because I think I like Rogue One better than either of the sequels.
Yeah, I might be there with you.
But I keep forgetting that it exists. So I'm like, well, maybe did I like it that much then? I don't know.
Maybe we're just getting old.
I think so. I think I am just, yeah. I think we are, Ian. I think we are. Maybe,
but
maybe,
think,
maybe, maybe Star Wars is not for us.
Speaking of getting rapidly older, let's talk about Shazam!
Aha! Shazam! Yes!
How do you like that segue?
Haha! The other Captain Marvel.
Now, same as before, we're going to do the non-spoilery talk first. We'll give you a fair warning when we get into some of the nitty-gritty, although I don't think we'll go that deep this time.
We'll see.
And then we'll dive into the Q&A.
There's a pretty big thing that happens at the end of the movie that we probably shouldn't spoil because the movie itself didn't really...
It did not.
Or I should
say... If I'm thinking of what you're thinking.
The promotion of the movie didn't really spoil it. The movie itself kind of telegraphed a lot of that stuff, but... The promotion
I didn't see it coming, but I know nothing about that franchise. So, but yes, I'm very glad that the trailers did not spoil it because yes. I was happily surprised. But anyway, what'd you think?
Well, it's DC's best outing yet. I haven't mm-hmm. seen Aquaman, but I can probably safely assume this is better than that. This is just a really solid, just if we're talking superhero origin story movies, this is a really freaking good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's super fun. It's nice to have a character in the DC universe that isn't all dour and sad. Wonder Woman luckily is not, but Aquaman, I guess he's not. I don't really know.
You know, I never got around to Aquaman.
I never did either. We both kind of went for Into the Spider-Verse instead, which came out at about the same time, so
I'm still fairly confident that was the better choice.
I think so. I would agree. But I've heard Aquaman is pretty decent, so
I've heard it's fun.
Yeah.
So
but Shazam, also a lot of fun. I would say that casting Sinbad as the genie is absolutely perfect. It's genius casting. Come on, Ian. Come on. Shazam. Kazam. Sinbad.
Right, genie. That was a thing that happened.
Okay, yes. April Fool's.
Is that what killed his career? I can't remember now.
April Fool's. That did not happen. That is not a thing that happened. There was not a movie in the mid-90s called Shazam starring Sinbad as a genie. You're thinking of Kazam starring Shaquille O'Neal as a genie.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, okay.
But apparently, the fact that there's so many people who think that there was actually a movie in the mid-90s called Shazam starring Sinbad, and the fact that it does not exist means we live in an alternate universe.
Yeah, okay.
I can't believe I have to explain this to you. You've never heard the Mandela Effect?
I've heard of that. I just haven't heard this facet of it.
Is it
I'm more familiar with the Berenstain, Berenstein thing.
Okay. Have they always been Berenstain to you, or were they Berenstain?
Oh, yeah. It was always the Berenstain Bears.
Okay, good. Okay, so
it's
we...
It's a sliding rhyme. It's
So me and you have always lived in the same universe.
Right.
So if you're from the Berenstain Bears universe, welcome. So, Shazam it's different. This is a different thing. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I went into it hearing that it was, you know, upbeat and
yep.
fun and lighthearted. So given how gruesome it gets at points, it took me very much by surprise.
It does a little bit. There is
that opening sequence is rough, dude.
There's also the one scene. It's partway through the movie. That is very much inspired. Looks like it's very much inspired by Independence Day. Just that sort of yeah, the office boardroom scene is very similar to kind of the alien waking up and attacking everybody in Independence Day. So,
Before they get to that segment, there's a moment of brutality that they cut away at the very last second. It's like, ooh,
yeah. So they're still kind of keeping a little bit of that DC edge that was sort of that they started with the earlier movies, but they're not leaning hard into it, which is good.
It feels like classic Disney, you know?
Yeah.
It isn't afraid to, it doesn't pull its punches, but it doesn't dwell on the darkness and the hubris of man so much. There is light and there is dark and they come into conflict and it's fun.
Yeah. It's I mean, yeah, fun is just a good way to describe the whole freaking movie. Like, I don't really know how else to describe it in terms of not spoiling it.
Again, this is me entering into the film knowing very, very little the Captain Marvel, Shazam, whatever you want to call it, franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience with Dr. Savannah, Professor Savannah?
Oh, geez, I don't remember. I'm in terms of Shazam, like, I know Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam, and Mary Marvel, and that's about the extent of it for me. I don't know the villains. I don't know. Yeah, I know who he is now, but yeah, I didn't know who he was. And, oh, and Black Adam. I know who Black Adam is.
Oh, sure.
That's about it.
But Savannah, all I knew of him was he was a dude who was bald in like the lab coat and was off to the corner going, "I will defeat you, Billy Batson," or something like that. And it's like, okay, yeah. He's a Lex Luthor-ish type, whatever.
Sounds like a Golden Age supervillain.
Yeah. In this, he is probably one of the best supervillains in the superhero genre across all films. I'm counting Marvel, too.
Really?
He eclipses most of the Marvel villains by a mile.
Yeah. And Marvel has always kind of had a rough patch with most of their villains.
And I love the fact that he's never made the joke. I mean, there are jokes around him, but they never have to dial down his level of threat. They don't have to make him do something goofy to make him approachable. He is always in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's just a neat balancing act with the villainy. It really feels like Shazam triumphs over him. It isn't that, oh, we had to find a way for him to lose by the end of the movie. It really feels like a conflict. It really feels like he is a serious threat start to finish. And I really liked that.
They built him up pretty well. I was pretty pleased with the way that Dr. Savannah ended up overall. There is a point toward in the final battle that is really freaking hilarious involving a classic villain speech. I won't spoil what happens. I won't spoil how it goes now, but it's really freaking funny.
But again, it's the situation that's being funny. We're not diminishing him.
No. Yeah. It's, he does the classic villain speech, but of course there's a twist to it that, you know, is just absolutely hysterical.
Another thing I heard going in was that there were very major themes of family, and that the group home that Billy is sent to is not only a central part of the film, but feels very natural to it. And I absolutely have to agree with that. The kids all feel like they have a role to play. You actually get this sense of family from them and the foster parents, and the meaning of family and how it can go right and how it can go wrong is a very nicely constructed theme throughout the entire film that I did not anticipate and I thought was very well executed. So
yeah, I didn't.
Kudos to that.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate it either. Actually, it's also kind of interesting because I feel like Marvel movies frequently suffer from Marvel movie characters, I should say, frequently suffer from daddy issues. to put it in general terms, Peter Quill, he definitely has daddy issues. Like even Tony Stark has daddy issues, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of interesting to see mother issues just in terms of Billy's relationship with his mother, or I should say non-relationship with his mother.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that is actually kind of an interesting and something that sets it a little bit different, sets it apart, I think, from other superhero fare. So I think that's cool.
And I feel like it kind of follows a lot of the beats that we see in all these superhero origin movies.
Oh yeah.
But I feel like this one felt fresher. Something about the way that, I guess it was that Shazam doesn't really become a superhero in his own right until like maybe the very end of Act 3.
Yeah.
It's a kid with phenomenal powers for most of the film and they have fun with that. And that gives it that kind of spark of joy.
I think we really haven't seen a like a just someone just really having fun and enjoying their like enjoying their powers like this since like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, maybe.
Yeah.
Who's a character who's given these incredible feats, this incredible strength, these incredible abilities, and just has fun with it. Someone who doesn't like is not like overcome with problems or overcome with like, you know, a emotion or like they're just this overall dour feeling to their personality. It's just someone who's just having fun with the fact that, holy crap, I'm suddenly a superhero. Whoa.
Exactly.
Holy crap, I have these super cool abilities. I can do all the sorts of fun stuff now. Look at me, I'm having fun. I'm having a good time. And then the villain comes up and it's like, oh, now I have to be all serious. But I can still have fun because, you know, we've already established that I'm a character that likes to have fun. And that's been such a rarity in superhero movies, especially in on DC's side, but even Marvel's kind of gotten like, oh, Marvel's so serious now. Marvel's should be, the Joker should be asking why Marvel is so serious now. They're so serious. They got this end game. Oh, I'm still looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. We kind of touched on this earlier, but the sequence that they showed off in the trailers about Billy and Freddy testing out what powers he has. I'm very happy to say not all of that is spoiled by the trailers. There are more trials that they do.
Oh, they're doing,
they are funny.
They're doing.
So the trailers did a great job of conveying what the film is, what some of the gags are, but they don't spoil the whole bloody thing like so many of these freaking trailers do.
Yeah, they test out a lot of powers that they didn't mention in the trailers. They test out a lot of powers that you're like, why are you testing this? Like, oh, okay, I get it.
I'm thinking of one in particular, but we said we weren't going to spoil anything at this point, so...
Are we ready to start spoiling stuff now? I don't know. Is there more we can say?
I think so.
Okay, good.
So, patrons in the chat, turn off your ears for a minute if you don't want to be spoiled. The rest of you, scroll down, click the link to jump to the Q&A, and we'll see you in a couple minutes.
All right. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's spoil.
So I'm cracking up super bad at the... teleportation test that turns into fireproof test.
Yes. Yes, that is a great one. Also, the point I mentioned during the supervillain speech toward the end of the movie also proves that Billy does not have super hearing.
Fair point.
Because Dr. Savannah is freaking yelling his villain speech, but they're like half a mile apart, so Billy can't hear him. So it just keeps cutting back and forth between the two of them. Dr. Savannah's giving a serious villain speech, like, I am the greatest, I will defeat you, and whatever he says, I don't know. And then Billy's just like, what? I can't hear you. You're way over there. I can't hear you from here. You gotta move closer.
I think I was the only one who laughed entirely too hard at this in the theater, but when they're having their first confrontation in the mall,
oh,
which apparently was filmed in one of the malls up here.
Oh, really?
I didn't recognize the layout. I did recognize that the subway system that he gets into is the TTC up here. The entire movie was filmed up here, but the only part I really recognized was the TTC. Maybe some of the neighborhood styles, but
it's cheaper to film up there. Remember?
Yeah. But in the chase sequence through the toy store, and he picks up that giant Batman standee and just throws it across the room. Get him, Batman! And he doesn't even like make it halfway across the floor.
I did quite enjoy the little floor piano as a little shout out to Big as
yes!
Well. Yes. That was very fun. I'm like, that's a very similar movie to this.
And they hyped up, I don't remember any of the actors' names off the top of my head, but the fellow playing Shazam. The fact that
Zachary Levi.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
The fact that he was able to convey that kind of adolescent boyness and do it in an authentic way was really impressive. The fact that they were able to do that with the entire family was really impressive.
I really just overall like the fact that it's pretty clear that Billy Batson and Shazam are the same person. They do a really good job of playing them like as the same character. He doesn't really like his personality doesn't really, you know, change overall. I mean, he looks different. He's clearly it's a completely different person in real life, but just the fact that they've managed to they play each other really well. Like the kid who plays Billy and then Zachary Levi, they both did a great job. And then they did a really good job, of course, with the rest of the family, like you said. And spoiler alert within the spoilers, the family does appear. The Marvel family, the Shazam family, they do appear in Act 3. And they did a really good job of not spoiling that throughout like the entire marketing campaign, which is brilliant. They could have leaned on that heavy. They could have said, oh, yeah, the whole Shazam family is going to show up. And they could have said that from like the beginning. And they never did.
Like, I knew of it, like you said, Mary Marvel. And I'm like, are they going to do that as a sequel hook? Are they going to like tease it a little bit? You know, kind of like in Iron Man 1 where Rhodey looks at the Mark 1 and goes, next time, baby. So are they going to pull that? No. They went for broke and it was delightful.
Yeah. I sat there for most of the movie. Well, not most of the movie, but most of Act 3. Sitting there like, okay, they have telegraphed this like pretty hard during the movie. I'm like, are they going to do it? They're definitely toying with it. They're playing at least with Mary. They're like, okay, are we going to get Mary Marvel? And I'm like, throughout the whole final battle, Act 3, I'm like, okay, Billy, give Mary the power too. Come on, give Mary the power. Come on, are they going to do it? Are you going to give Mary the power? Are we going to get Mary Marvel? Are we going to get Mary Marvel? Come on, Billy. Like they're focusing pretty heavily on Mary too,
right.
Throughout a bit of that, and she comes up pretty frequently. She's probably the most prolific member of the family that isn't Billy and Freddy. There we go, Freddy, Billy and Freddy. I'm like, come on, are we gonna get Mary? Are we gonna get Mary? And Ian, we got Mary, and we got everybody else. Yes.
Of course, I just appreciated when, you know, they figure out the deal with the sins.
Yep.
And their plan is to split them up. And I'm thinking, okay, are we going to have this whole youthful hijinks segment where they're hiding in tents and luring them all over? And no, the giant immortal demons grab them pretty damn quick.
Yep.
And I appreciated that.
It makes some sense. It makes sense. Like, the immortal demons are going to eat these kids alive unless they do something about it. And luckily they did. So, but yeah, I think getting Freddy and Mary in there especially was good. And then, but then the rest of the family was just icing on the cake. It's like, yes, yes. I have to say the actress who played Darla as superhero Darla, I don't know her name offhand, but the actress who played her was like the way she tried to talk to Santa.
Remember? Yeah, she was perfect.
Yes,
there's no other word for it. She was just perfect.
It was absolutely hysterical, and I really really loved it, and I hope Santa. I want that Santa to be the cameo guy for DC movies. It should just have him in every movie. Just have that Santa guy there. Yep. Also, it's really interesting that this movie takes place at Christmas. I may have to rescind my feelings of Die Hard being the best Christmas movie, and I may have to move this one up there. I don't know. This is a really good Christmas movie that came out.
Bold words, sir.
This is a really good Christmas movie that came out in April. Then again, Die Hard came out in the summer. So,
There are parallels.
Yes. There's I guess. There's more parallels with Big than with Die Hard, though. Which they play.
So all we need now is Tim Hanks to say, now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Perfect. Cut, print, it's done. We're good. Are there any other spoilerific fun? Any other spoilerific things we can get into? Any other fun we can have?
I'm sure there is, but part of it is just the joy of seeing it all unfold.
It really is. So, it really is.
It's definitely worth the ticket price if you haven't seen it yet before Avengers takes over the world. And it's definitely worth picking up once it finally comes out on home media format of your choice.
Yeah, that's really. It's just fun. It's not really gonna like change the world or anything, but it's just an exciting, delightful superhero movie. And it's just it's really like a traditional superhero movie. It feels kind of like a slightly. It definitely has that golden age flair, I feel like, especially because Shazam's costume looks almost exactly like the comics, which I'm so happy now that superhero movies are leaning into making their costumes look like actual superheroes instead of trying to be like, oh, you got to have them look, you know, kind of believable and realistic. This movie's just like, nah, forget that.
It's magic. I ain't got to explain nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. So and also it's kind of. The cameo at the end is pretty fun, but it's only for a quick second, so it's not really a major thing, but you know, it's kind of cool. And then of course we got the villain tease for the for any sequels, which I hope there
yeah I had
will
to look
be.
That up because
I hope there will be. I did too. Brilliant. Was like, I was kind of like, who's that? I don't really know. I'm
it's like, okay, you very clearly foreshadowed it. Just what is?
Yeah. It's like I don't know what's going on and who everybody in the Captain Marvel's Shazam's thing is. I don't know. I know Mary Marvel because I love Mary Marvel. She's great, but that's about it. So, but yeah, I'm hoping that there will be more, and I really just had overall a good time. It's just fun, and it's funny. It's funny, Ian. There's a DC Universe movie that's funny. It's absolutely hilarious. So, yeah, it's well worth your time. Go watch it. Forget this show. Go watch the movie. All right, Ian. Have we had enough talk of that? Do we want to jump over into the Q&A? Let's do that.
Let's do. If you want to have your question answered here on the Bumblecast, write to us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter @Bumblecast. Or if you're on YouTube, comment anywhere below on this video. Or if you're a patron, just kind of post anywhere within the Patreon page. We'll find it.
Yeah, or message us in Patreon. Whatever, however you want to do it. It's just do the things that we say to do, and we might get to your question eventually. We're trying.
If you tweet to me, I will redirect it to the Bumblecast. I will not answer it myself. If you flood my Twitter feed with questions, I'm not going to retweet them all. I'm just going to ignore you. It's not that hard. If you're on Twitter, go to @Bumblecast.
Yes.
And if you have a burning question that must be answered now, please head over to patreon.com/Bumblecast and buy your priority with the priority Q&A perk.
And if you send a whole slew of questions to the Bumblecast Twitter, just be known that we're seeing them. I'm seeing them, but it's a lot of questions, and we don't know when or if we'll ever get around to all of them. So calm down.
Oh, we'll probably do another Q&A bonanza for the 100th, so why not?
We'll see. All right, well, let's get into the Patreon Power Q&A featuring Scruffy Matt. Hey, fellas, how's it going? The latest Bumblecast episode got me hyped for Bumble Quest. So I went back to season 3 of the Bumblecast to listen to when you talked about some of the other role-playing games you'd played and the characters you'd had and the characters you'd played. I was wondering what some of your most memorable and hilarious moments were from those games. Did you ever come up with an utterly ridiculous plan that had no chance of working and yet it worked because you rolled really high? Did you ever roll a natural 1 and fail in a most amusing fashion?
See, I think I have to go back and listen to that Bumblecast myself, because I don't remember a lot of tabletop-style RPGs I've played. You know, the kind that would fit the question. Kyle?
I can't remember if I talked about these already. I know that the very first time I played D&D and my character was introduced, the very first thing I ended up doing was rolling a natural 20, and then immediately followed that by a natural 1 with my second roll.
Wow.
So
you
that kind of
large, Kyle.
And that really set the tone for my character overall, because I frequently rolled 1s and 20s with her. There was a point I remember during a campaign where some sort of gas vent was opened up while we were in a dungeon. And I had no idea if being able to... I had this idea of being able to maybe run across the room and kick the valve to close it. And I was almost sure it was not going to work. And I thought we were all going to die from asphyxiation on this gas. And I was like, is this going to work? Am I going to be able to pull this off? And somehow I did manage to pull it off, thanks to rolling... What did I roll? I think I did roll a 20 on that one. At least I rolled something ridiculously high that I was not expecting. And was like, oh, all right, cool. So I ran across the room and kicked a valve closed. That's how awesome my character is.
Bravo.
So I did not die. I did not die, and not everybody else died. Jeez, I'm trying to remember any other fun moment. I just remember playing a character that could literally attack. There were like four or five enemies, and I remember I was playing a character that could literally attack each of them, running, darting back and forth across the battlefield. I was like, oh, this character is kind of broken. It was kind of a monk that could use swords. A monk that used swords. So they weren't really a monk. They were kind of a homebrew style dual sword wielder that was ridiculously fast. Move like 150 feet in a single turn, which is like in D&D terms, usually you can move like 30. In D&D terms, yeah. Having 150 feet of movement is you can move anywhere and be practically broken. So, and I would take feats that would let me do multiple attacks during one round. So basically, I could just, yep, you're dead. Oop, you're dead. Oop, you're dead. Oop, you're dead. Oop, you're dead. It's like, is this how I'm supposed to play the game? Is this character broken? I'm not so sure if this character is as broken or is not broken, but it was a ton of fun. So I really like that character. Jeez, that's really about it. You got any standout moments for you in role-playing game history, Ian?
Not that I can really think of outside of... There was one I was playing where the character I had was dealing with a evil split personality, you know, that old chestnut, and got into a fight with one of the party members. And he was very cool about it because these were very loose rules. Sure. And the way that the fight kind of played out, it was like, well, I can kind of go easy on you out of character, but if we're going to continue this naturally, you're going to lose an eye. And he's like, well, that's how it goes. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
And he spent the rest of the campaign maimed.
Hey.
I felt really bad about that.
You know, it, if the players are willing to go through with something like that, then, well, hey, that's fine. It's only one eye. You have two.
I feel like there was a lot of instances in that campaign where the evil side was a little... too quick-witted, because I had kept having to find ways for him to be drawn away somewhere else so that the rest of the party could survive. It's like, oh, I've won. Let's have something else happen. Quickly message this guy. Can you come in and play real quick, you know, a valiant rescue, because I'm about to win and I don't want to win. That would be bad.
Time to fudge some rolls. Except you probably, were you rolling at that time? Was it roll? Was it a rolling?
No, it was very free form, okay. But at the same time, it was like I'm going to do all I can to impede my own success.
Yes. Okay, good. At least you're not the kind of DM that just squashes the players.
No, because
that's no fun.
It could be fun, but that's if it's specifically for that character or it would do something for the game. Just squashing somebody because you can, that's not fun.
Maybe the players deserve it. I don't know.
Possibly, but no, I had a good group.
Okay, good. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on into the standard Q&A from everyone else out there who's not in Patreon land. This first one comes from Kudamon 2006. How big is Tangle the lemur? Well, I hear she is huge in Sri Lanka.
Nah. Roughly Sonic's size.
Okay. What is Sonic's size?
I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head. Go over to, what is it called? Sonic Channel, the Japanese site. It's got all their official measurements.
SonicTheHedgehog.co.jp.uk.com.fun. I don't know. Really. I'm just making stuff up at this point. Is he like 3.5 feet tall or whatever?
I think so.
Okay.
Like, I think 100 centimeters or I don't remember.
And he's 15 or 30 in hedgehog years. I don't think they say that. All right. Next question comes from Asura04. As a follow-up regarding Shadow not working for Gun. Okay, I'm sorry. Does that mean they're essentially contractors? Or are they just like the Freedom Fighters, where they just sort of butt into everything and Gun just sort of shrugs and goes, "Whoa, well, get him briefed, I guess."
I don't know. Shadow specifically will show up and work with someone or an organization if it benefits him. But it, from my understanding, it's not really a regular thing. He's kind of a Vegeta-esque character in that he just seeks out strong opponents and does his own thing. As for Rouge and Omega, I really don't know, but I don't think there's any official connection between Gun and any of them. It's just, it is what it is.
Or apparently isn't in this case.
Yeah.
All right. So I see why you have not really played with their connection to Gun, which is good.
Or lack thereof. Yeah,
Yeah.
Starting out the new series, we're going to be focusing on Sonic's world because the whole two world thing kind of flusters a lot of people.
Might as well just avoid all that crap. And get into the next question from Brody M. Would you like to have a crossover between Sonic and the Marvel Universe, such as Avengers, Spider-Man, the X-Men, and Fantastic Four?
Maybe. I think you'd need the right scenario, the right team. If it was just like the Marvel U in general, I think that's casting too wide of a net.
Sure.
Maybe Spider-Man, since they're both kind of high-speed acrobatic snarksters. They'd be fun to play off each other, but I haven't really put a lot of thought in that particular direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's Quicksilver, but depending on which version of Quicksilver you go with, I would say that the X-Men movies Quicksilver is more like Sonic than the Marvel movies Quicksilver, who is currently not very quick. He might still be Silver, but he's not very quick anymore.
Although it would be kind of fun to see a Hulk Knuckles throw down.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then Big just walks in and single-handedly pulls them apart. No fighting! That's mean!
That would be very good. It's very good. All right, next one comes from Swiss Chaos Roll. Hi, I'm currently trying to make a superhero team, or a hero team, not a superhero team. Sorry, I misread that. With inspiration being from the Sonic series. Do you have any advice?
I'm not quite following the question. Like, are you talking like a hero team a la Sonic Heroes set in like the Sonic universe? Or do you mean like, are you creating your own thing, but you're using Sonic as an inspiration? Because if it's the former, if you're just creating like a fan group within your own kind of OC territory, I'd say go for something unconventional. You know, pick a species that hasn't been done to death, like foxes and hedgehogs. Don't make them overpowered because everybody makes them overpowered. Find a specific trait and go from there. If you're doing something original, but you want to use Sonic as the inspiration because you're familiar with that territory and you want to build from there, I would say look at what you like about the series and the characters that you're trying to emulate and boil that down to the absolute core values so that it isn't really Sonic anymore. If you're looking at Sonic, what is it about him in particular that you want to emulate in your thing? Is it just the super speed? Is it the attitude? Is it the way that he treats others? Is it the way he looks at the world? You know, what is it about the character specifically that you enjoy? And how can you recreate that? Or how can you put a twist on it? You know, if Sonic would interact with this scenario one way, how would your character go about it in a different way? So you're not just doing a one-to-one sort of thing. And then if you build from that mindset, eventually you're going to find that your project isn't even Sonic-related anymore. It has grown into something of its own, that it's built upon its own fundamental. And from there, just see where it goes. That becomes a much larger question after that.
Alrighty. And finally, our last question comes from William C. If I remember right, you once said you had ideas or aspirations for a Donkey Kong comic, yeah? I was wondering, purely hypothetically, would such a comic require Donkey Kong and Diddy and Dixie and whoever to talk? Or could they stay silent?
Okay, so no, I did not put that out there. If I know what you're referencing, I think I do, in the Archie magazine that ran a few years ago, there was like an article in it where one of the copy editors tossed the idea out there of a Donkey Kong book. And I pinged the editor of Sonic at the time, since they pretty much handled any licensed video game stuff, because we were still doing Mega Man then. I said, is that really on the table? Are we fishing for feedback? And he said, I have no idea where that came from. I don't think that was ever a serious consideration. It certainly wasn't on my end. It wasn't with anyone I knew of. But to get to the meat of the question, how would I approach a DK book? I think that would hinge a lot on what Nintendo wanted. If they wanted a talkie book, if they wanted a non-talkie book, if they wanted the DK crew to be more like their more present incarnations, you know, all grunts and noises and not really like N64 version or the Donkey Kong Country games where there was some dialogue. It really depends on how they would want that franchise represented. And I would just have to be able to build from there. If it was a non-talky book, we'd just have to go very much pantomimey and rely on the visual storytelling a whole lot more than what I typically do.
Yeah. We could just make it like the Donkey Kong Country cartoon. Same art style and everything. There you go. Perfect. I did it for you, Ian. I did all the work for you. You're welcome.
You did something. I'll give you that.
I just made the audience puke. Thank you. I'm glad I could help. Here's the funny thing. First of all, I do not remember that show looking as bad as it does. Do not remember that show looking terrible at all, but it's bad. It's really bad.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, I didn't grow up with cable, so any chance for cable to even enter my life was kind of amazing, like mind-opening, mind-bending experience. And I remember staying in a hotel on a vacation one year, and there was a Donkey Kong Country cartoon marathon. And I sat there and I watched that cartoon, Ian. I watched
back
the heck
back
out of that cartoon, and I liked it. It was also like 1994 or 95 or whenever. So Donkey Kong Country was huge. It was the cool thing. I was playing the heck out of it. I love Donkey Kong Country. And so I was like, Donkey Kong Country cartoon. And I was just super excited to be watching a Donkey Kong Country cartoon. So I liked that cartoon then at the time. I look at it now and I'm like, how did I watch this? What was I thinking? Was it really just the fact that it was a Donkey Kong Country cartoon that it was so exciting to me? And apparently it was. And I didn't have cable. So, and it was on cable and I didn't know it existed and it just happened. It just came on and I'm like, Donkey Kong Country. Yeah, I was a really dumb kid. I was really dumb, Ian. I still am.
We all have our foibles.
I still am, but it's in a different way now, at least. At least I could look at the Donkey Kong Country cartoon now and go, ooh, that looks like hot garbage.
I feel like I caught it on a marathon as well and was watching it going, this is kind of fun, but it's also kind of terrible. Am I giving it enough credit because it's just Donkey Kong? Why is there a Donkey Kong cartoon? There hasn't been a Donkey Kong Country game in years. Why is this here? What is this? And then I never saw it again.
Yeah, that was like the only time I saw it too until the internet happened and then the people started making fun of it. And I'm like, yeah, that's worth making fun of. It's not good. It's not good. All right. Well, we've been doing the Q&A here for a long time, but we have not really delved much into the other comments that are not question and answer related. But we had a good one that I wanted to highlight, a good comment that I wanted to highlight in light of our recent April Fool's fun that we had a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read this one, this comment from the Swordsman 100, who I think figured out our plan with the April Fool's stuff really well. He figured out our secret plan. So here we go. He says, I see. So by producing high-quality Sonic comics, Ian will gain enough trust to do an epic multiversal crossover where he kills off all the versions of every character who has ever joined the Freedom Fighters, killing Sonic off permanently, thereby destroying the franchise. This will cause a massive outrage from the Sonic fandom, which Ian will harness and turn into an amazing power source to take over the world. But the FBI and the CIA are onto Ian's master plan. So Kyle is using his massive fortune from his hit radio show to hire Russian gay frog assassins to cause interference and create several Ian clones, which will cover up Ian's actions and make him appear innocent. But once Ian is in power, he reveals his true motive. Have Wart from Super Mario Bros. 2, the American version, make a comeback. I'm on to you, Ian! The Swordsman 100 has figured out our secret plans.
Unfortunately, Mr. Swordsman will not be seen again.
No.
My agents have taken care of the little boy.
The Swordsman
100. Thanks for listening.
The Swordsman 100 will no longer be the Swordsman 100. We have stolen his swords.
He has been sheathed, shall we say.
So, you know, if you have any other fun comments out there, if you want to get your comments read on the show, hit us up with some comments, you know? Maybe you don't have a question. Maybe you just want to say something fun, stupid, or fun and stupid, or not stupid at all. It's up to you. Thank you, Valerie. I appreciate that. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast, now that our secret plans have been revealed, Ian.
Yeah, well, if you want to keep up with anything else I've got planned, head over to Twitter at IanBKC or BumbleKing.com, which is my con schedule of everything I've got going on, news posts, and all that happy stuff. What about you, henchman Kyle?
You can head on over to kngi.org, where you can find archived episodes of this show, and you can also listen to my other show, Nitro Game Ejection, which streams live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So, you know, after you listen to the Bumblecast in the morning, head on over to KNGI.org in the evening and listen to some awesome video game music remixes and other awesome stuff. So I got some changes in the works in terms of the live stream of the stream server, I should say, that NGI is hosted on. So if you listen to that stream, which you can do 24/7, there will be some changes to it in the next couple weeks or so that will make it even more awesome. So be sure to go check that out You can also follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. I don't remember if I said that or not. But
you did not.
I said it now.
You can follow the show or shoot questions over on Twitter at BumbleCast. Or shoot us an email at BumbleCast@yahoo.com for any kind of correspondence.
All right. And don't forget to check out the Bumble store, shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore, where you can get all sorts of cool accessories, apparel, and other things emblazoned with the BumbleCast logo or with our lovely drawn faces and all sorts of other stuff. So all sorts of options over there for you. Go ahead and check it out. Bumble store.
Patrons, you get exclusive live gaming by Kyle and I every Sunday evening, and everybody else can catch us every now and again over on our Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the BumbleCast. Let's give a shout out to all the people who make the show possible.
There you go. That's what I was about to get to.
Ah.
So big thank you to Daniel H, Eric F, Connell T, Alex P, Scruffy Matt, Saturn Flicky, Duas Diz Den, Chris A, John B, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Lisa M, Mike B, Samuel P, Sam Cybercat, Digama F, Wow, Dragon Superfan, AE Double, Brody M, Neil H, Justin G, DM S, Adam T, Silly String, to Carl, Lee H, K, Chevelle, Don B, San Fritz, Hucko Elgato Comics, John M, James K, Adam B, T, Overthink Films, and Ron.
All right. Thank you, everybody, as always, for your continued support of the BumbleCast. That'll do it for BumbleCast number 89.
Yeah, we're closing in on the big centennial episode.
Ooh, only a few months away.
What shall we do?
I don't know, probably a giant Q&A session again.
Yeah, probably. Have a good night, everybody!
Bye!
Patrons, you can get... Kyle, cut this.
You've been listening to the BumbleCast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Well, that was a show.